A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
There's a particular kind of listener who has a city in their head before they've ever set foot in it. They've assembled it from films and photographs and stray paragraphs in books, and they carry it around like a private map. Hannah sent us one of those maps this week. She's been carrying Hong Kong around for years. Not the skyline, not the towers, but the older city. The dense, layered cinematic version. Art deco bones, neon arteries, wet streets, ferries, markets, balconies with laundry and birdcages, that specific Hong Kong atmosphere that feels like a speakeasy you're always about to find. And she's asking three things. 1. How much of that city is still standing, and how much was always partly a fantasy? 2. Has she missed her chance? Did the political crackdown after the Umbrella Movement, the national security law, the closing of Apple Daily, did all of that take something irreplaceable with it? And 3. If she went now, where would she actually go to understand the real city, rather than just see the tourist sites?
So we're testing a romantic image against what's actually on the ground. And the first thing to say is that the romantic image isn't a lie. It's a collage of genuine fragments, real things that exist or existed, assembled into something that never quite existed as a whole. The neon was real. The Tong Lao tenements with their balconies and ground floor markets were real. The Star Ferry is real. It's still running. It's been running since 1888 and carries millions of passengers a year. But the image of Hong Kong as this coherent lost city of atmosphere, that was always a selective edit.
A salvage operation dressed as a postcard.
And to answer Hannah's question properly, we need to disentangle three forces that have been reshaping the city simultaneously. One is Beijing's political crackdown, real, severe, post-2019, the national security law, the protest culture erased from public space, the media shutdown. Two is market-driven redevelopment, which has been demolishing and rebuilding Hong Kong for decades. That's not new, it's the city's operating system. Three is organic cultural change, an aging population, shifting tastes, the same forces that turn every city over generation by generation. If you blame all the loss on politics, you miss 2/3 of the story. If you ignore the politics, you miss what's new and grim.
So let's take the romantic image piece by piece. What's actually in it?
The neon first, because it's the most visually iconic and the most misunderstood. The famous neon signs, the ones that made Hong Kong look like the inside of a Wong Kar-wai film, have been disappearing fast, but not primarily because of Beijing. In 2010, a Hong Kong court ruling made unregistered outdoor signs illegal, and that kicked off a wave of removals. The government introduced a formal sign registration scheme in 2023, but by then the economics had already shifted. LEDs are cheaper, building safety regulations are tighter, and the old sign makers. There was a wonderful Guardian piece about this in 2019, we're fighting to save a fading art. The main drivers were local courts and market forces, not a political directive from the mainland.
So the neon died by bureaucracy and LED pricing, not by edict.
Mostly, though there's a subtler point. The 2023 registration scheme does give the government a tool to remove signs it doesn't like, and in the current political climate, a sign that's too expressive or too independent-minded might find itself unregistered for reasons that aren't purely about building safety. But the mass disappearance was already underway. The political angle is a recent overlay on a much older story.
What about the buildings themselves? The Tong Lao, the mixed-use tenements with the shop on the ground floor, the residences above, the balconies, the laundry, the birdcages.
Still everywhere. Go to Sham Shui Po, go to Mong Kok, go to Wan Chai. The Tong Lao are the urban fabric. The balcony is real, the density is real, the ground floor market with someone's grandmother living two floors up is real. What's been aestheticized is the idea that this is timeless. These buildings were always being torn down and rebuilt, just slower than today. The Tong Lao you see now are mostly post-war, 1950s and 60s. They replaced earlier buildings. The cycle has been running for a century.
So the form is genuine, but the freeze frame is the fantasy.
Right. And that matters because it changes what you're looking at. If you think the Tonglao are a fragile relic, you see every construction fence as a tragedy. If you understand they've always been provisional, you see the ones that survive as remarkably stubborn rather than tragically doomed.
The Star Ferry and the trams.
Not romantic fantasies. Working transit. Millions of people use them every day. The Star Ferry costs about $2 Hong Kong on the upper deck. That's, what, 25 US cents, and it's been running since 1888. It survives because it's cheap and because it's culturally protected in a way that's hard to formalize but very real. Hong Kongers would riot if someone tried to kill the Star Ferry. The trams on Hong Kong Island are the same. They're slow. They're 120 years old, they're completely impractical by modern transit standards, and they're still running because the city has decided, without ever quite saying so, that they belong.
The speakeasy lair. The Art Deco. The clandestine. The cocktail bar hidden behind an unmarked door.
This is where the fantasy gets thickest. Hong Kong had real Art Deco buildings. The old Bank of China building, the Central Market, the Wan Chai Market from 1937, which is still standing. But the speakeasy vibe is largely a 2010s cocktail bar marketing invention projected backward. The city was never particularly clandestine. It was brash and commercial and in your face. The hidden bar behind the false shopfront, that's a Shanghai thing, or a New York thing during Prohibition, and Hong Kong bars borrowed the aesthetic because it sold expensive drinks. The actual historical Hong Kong was a port city where business was done loudly and in public.
So the image is a real collage. The ingredients are genuine. But the composition, the moody, secretive, cinematic whole, that was assembled by film directors and bar owners and travel photographers, not by the city itself.
And that's not a criticism. Collages are how we fall in love with places. But it means Hannah's question, how much was always fantasy, has a specific answer. The ingredients were real. The dish was prepared by someone else.
Which brings us to the harder question. What's been lost to politics, and what was already on its way out?
Let me draw the line clearly. The National Security Law was imposed in June 2020. It criminalized secession, subversion, terrorism, and collusion with foreign forces, defined broadly enough that almost any organized dissent qualifies. Apple Daily, the pro-democracy newspaper, was shut down in June 2021 under the law. Its founder, Jimmy Lai, is in prison. The protest culture that defined Hong Kong during the Umbrella Movement in 2014 and the 2019 protests, that's been erased from public space. The BBC reported in 2023 on what they called the new normal self-censorship, the quiet departure of international businesses and talent, a public sphere where people measure their words.
That's not redevelopment. That's not organic cultural change. That's the state dismantling civil society.
Yes. And it's real, and it's profound, and it's changed the atmosphere of the city in ways that are hard to quantify but impossible to miss. The Hong Kong of the Umbrella Movement, the sense that the city was a place where political possibility was still open, that's gone as a live proposition. If Hannah's romantic image included the idea of Hong Kong as a bastion of free expression pushing back against authoritarianism, that part of the image has been foreclosed.
But that's not the whole story of loss. Some of what's disappeared was already going.
Right. The Kowloon-walled city, the most extreme version of the dense, layered, ungoverned Hong Kong, was demolished between 1993 and 1994. That was under British rule, years before the handover. The Kai Tak Airport closed in 1998, and the redevelopment of the old airport area changed Kowloon City's character long before 2019. The hawker culture, the street food stalls, the open-air markets, those have been formalized and regulated for decades. The original Tonglao stock has been replaced by modern residential towers since the 1980s.
So, the political crackdown landed on a city that was already being reshaped by money and time.
And that's the thing people get wrong when they talk about Hong Kong's loss. They collapse three different timelines into one, the political, the economic, the demographic, and then attribute everything to the most visible villain. But if you're trying to understand what you'd actually find if you went tomorrow, you need to know which parts of the old city were taken by the state and which parts were simply outbid.
Let's talk about what's still there. What still feels distinctly Hong Kong in a way that isn't a tourist reproduction?
The Cha Chon Teng. The tea restaurant. This is the most cross-class social space in the city. Breakfast is pantry toast. That's toast with condensed milk and peanut butter, and milk tea and macaroni soup with ham. It sounds absurd if you didn't grow up with it, but it's completely serious, completely unpretentious, and it's still everywhere. Office workers next to construction workers next to elderly couples who've been coming to the same booth for 40 years. The food hasn't changed. The formica tables haven't changed. The speed hasn't changed. You're in and out in 20 minutes, and if you linger, someone will give you a look.
The wet markets.
Still operating. Graham Street Market in Central, Reclamation Street Market in Mongkok. These are under pressure from supermarkets, and the stallholders are aging, and the next generation often doesn't want the business. But they're still there. The smell of dried seafood and incense, the live fish in tanks, the butcher with the cleaver and the wooden block, the vegetable seller who knows exactly which customers want the greens trimmed and which don't. This isn't a tourist experience. Tourists walk through taking photos and the stallholders ignore them. It's the city's operating system.
The density of signage, the speed of walking, the MTR's efficiency, the 7-Elevens on every corner.
None of that's changed. The MTR is still the best urban rail system in the world by most measures. On-time performance above 99%, trains every 2 minutes at peak, air-conditioned platforms. The walking speed is still ferocious. The 7-Elevens still sell fish balls and dim sum that are good. These aren't sights, they're texture. And texture is what Hannah's romantic image is really about. The feel of the city, not the monuments.
So if she accepts that the city has always been in flux, the question becomes practical. If she went now, where should she go?
Not the Peak. Not the Avenue of Stars. Not Disneyland. Start with Sham Shui Po. This is the densest, least gentrified older district. The Golden Computer Arcade, a multi-story market of electronic stalls that feels like a bazaar from a cyberpunk novel. The Appleyu Street Flea Market, old radios, vintage watches, tools, cables, things that fell off a truck in 1987. The Tung Lao on Pei Ho Street. Eat at a Cha Chan Ting. Khao Khi is famous for its beef brisket noodles, but any busy one will do. This is the closest thing to the older Hong Kong that still functions as a working-class neighborhood rather than a tourist set.
Wan Chai.
Specifically, the area around Lee Tung Avenue. It used to be Wedding Card Street. Now it's a pedestrian mall. But the old Wan Chai Market building is still there, Art Deco from 1937. The blue houses on Stone Nulla Lane, a cluster of Tung Lao that were preserved and painted a startling blue. The Star Ferry Pier. This is where old and new collide most visibly. You can stand on a street corner and see a 100-year-old tenement, a glass tower from 2015, and a Dai Pai Dong, an open-air cooked food stall, all in the same eyeline.
Kowloon City.
The area around the old airport. Go for the Thai restaurants. That's a legacy of Thai workers who built the airport, and it's now one of the best concentrations of Thai food outside Thailand. Nga Tin Wai Village is the last surviving walled village in Kowloon, a tiny cluster of low-rise houses surrounded by towers, completely surreal. And the Kowloon Walled City Park, on the site of the demolished walled city, with a tiny fragment of the original Yamen building still standing. The park is beautiful and completely misleading. It's a landscaped garden where the densest human settlement in history used to be. But that contrast is itself the story.
The escalator.
The Central Mid-Levels Escalator. Ride it early in the morning, before the bars open, when the old shopkeepers are opening their stalls. The contrast between the expat bar scene at night and the original neighborhood in the morning, that's the whole story of Hong Kong's transformation in one ride. You start in Central, in the financial district, and you rise through Soho, through the antique shops on Hollywood Road, through the wet market on Graham Street, past the mosque, up into the residential mid-levels. 20 minutes, 800 meters, the longest outdoor covered escalator system in the world, and it cuts through every layer of the city.
Food as a way in.
Cha Chan Teng for breakfast. Dai Pai Dong for lunch. Fewer every year, but still findable in Central Stanley Street and a few other pockets. Dim sum and an old school tea house. Lin Hung Tea House in Central closed in 2022 after more than 90 years, which was a genuine loss. But Lu Kyu Tea House is still open and has been since 1933. The dim sum is served from trolleys, the tea is strong, the room is all dark wood and ceiling fans, and nobody speaks English. That's not a bug.
The ferries.
Take the Star Ferry from Sim Sha Tsui to Central at sunset. It costs almost nothing. It takes 7 minutes, and the view of the skyline from the water is the one that every photographer wants and can't quite get because the light is always changing. Then take a random Kaito, a small ferry to an outlying island, Peng Chau or Lama. These are the version of Hong Kong that has no skyline at all. Fishing villages, seafood restaurants on stilts, no cars, paths through the jungle, old temples, the smell of the South China Sea. It's a completely different city, 40 minutes from Central.
So the answer to have we missed our chance is yes and no. The political Hong Kong, the city of the umbrella movement, the city that believed it could negotiate its own future, that city is gone. The cinematic Hong Kong of the 1990s, Chungking Express, In the Mood for Love, that was already partly a construction. Wong Kar-wai was making myths out of fragments, same as anyone. But the physical city is still extraordinarily dense, layered, and walkable. What's changed most is the atmosphere of possibility, not the built fabric.
And I think that's the thing to sit with. If you go looking for the Hong Kong of 2014, you'll be disappointed. If you go looking for the Hong Kong of 1994, you'll be chasing a film set. But if you go looking for the city that's actually there, the one that still has wet markets and cha-chan tongues and ferries and escalators and Tong Lao and the fastest walkers in the world and a specific quality of light through the bamboo scaffolding, that city is still there. It's just not posing for the camera anymore.
Which is almost better, in a way. A city that stopped performing its own myth is a city you can actually see.
We were faking it in 1997.
Go on.
I was a location scout for a production company, right after the handover. My job was finding old buildings that looked authentically Hong Kong for period films set in the 60s and 70s. The directors wanted wet streets and neon and bamboo scaffolding. We'd find a block that still had it, and then we'd have to dress the rest of the street because the 7-Eleven and the ATM and the fluorescent lighting would ruin the shot. The romantic image was already a salvage operation in 1997. The city people imagine, the one from the movies, that city was already half gone when the movies were made.
The fantasy was being constructed in real time, using fragments of a city that was already disappearing.
We had a Tong Lao on Wing Lok Street in Sheung Wan. Particular balcony configuration, deep, with the iron railings and the wooden shutters. We shot it 3 times in 2 years. It was famous in the location scouting community. And then one day, it was just gone. Demolished in 2004 for a hotel. Nobody told us. We showed up for a fourth shoot, and there was a construction pit.
Even the salvage operation was temporary.
What's different now is that the fantasy has become the only version people can access. Because the real city has become harder to romanticize. You can't make a Wong Kar-wai film about a city where everyone's measuring their words. But the city people were romanticizing in the 90s. That city was already being demolished while we were filming it. The difference is that back then, the demolition felt like progress. Now it feels like something else.
The same buildings, the same streets, but the story around them has changed.
The thing I keep wondering is whether it matters. If the image was always a collage, does it matter that the collage is harder to assemble now? You can still find the pieces. They're just not arranged for you anymore.
That might be the answer Hannah's actually looking for. The romantic image was always a collage of real fragments. The fragments are still there. But the act of assembly, that's on the visitor now. Nobody's going to hand you the cinematic version. You have to find your own fragments and make your own city.
Wing Lok Street's still there, by the way. The hotel they built is mediocre.
Of course you checked.
3 stars. Bad breakfast.
The open question is this. If the romantic image was always a collage of real fragments, does that make it less valuable? Or is the act of assembling a personal collage, choosing your own fragments, making your own Hong Kong, is that the real way to understand the city?
I think it's the latter. The prepackaged version was never the real thing. The real thing is the one you assemble yourself, in the walking, in the eating, in the ferry ride you took because it was there, not because a guidebook told you to.
Hong Kong will keep changing. The forces of redevelopment and political control will keep reshaping it. But the city's core character, its density, its commercial energy, its specific texture, that's not a fragile thing. It survived the handover, the Asian financial crisis, SARS, the umbrella movement, the national security law. It'll survive tourism, too.
If you want to hear more episodes that test romantic images against reality, or that treat cities as text to be read rather than sights to be seen, subscribe. And if you have a city in your head that you've never visited, send us your prompt. We're at show@myweirdprompts.com.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, who apparently spent 1997 dismantling the very fantasy he was being paid to construct.
This has been My Weird Props. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Props, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.